This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the Kitchen Studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Joe Van Gogh Coffee, serving the community from seed to cup, taking particular care at every step to honor the bean. And now, with food dying in the window as they're chatting at the table, it's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, prost, and welcome to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today, we are celebrating Oktoberfest, and for that, we brought in the wolf. The big bad wolf of Capital Club 16, Jake Wolf.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Welcome back, man. You were in the studio just last week to do a little promo for this weekend's or last weekend's festivities, and that you did, and that we had, and it was quite a time. Oktoberfest, we're talking about, just happened, for starters, on Friday at your restaurant in downtown Raleigh at Capital Club 16. And then continued the party on Saturday at Trophy Maywood that lasted pretty much all afternoon, all day long, where you were also slinging fare throughout the time. So let's get into Oktoberfest, just because a lot of people have no clue what Oktoberfest is. Maybe you can shed a little light into it. Why do we do this? Why do we drink our faces off in October?
Yeah, good question. And a lot of people say, like, hey, why do you celebrate Oktoberfest? Why do you start it in September? It's the two-week buildup in the last end of September to the first Sunday in October, where it was some it was a wedding of King Ludwig and Princess Teresa. I think that's the actual deal.
Yeah.
So they celebrated, and now we celebrate it. We do it in September. We push it through October every year. We try to have our big party and tied in with our anniversary at our restaurant. And then this year was the first time we actually had the double shot. We brought Musil Franzi and the Ya Ya Ya's down from New York City. They played at our place Friday night and then went to Trophy and really rocked it out, like you said, all day.
Yeah, that was fun.
Mm-hmm. Is polka, why is polka connected with, is it out of, has it originated in Bavaria?
Yeah, good question. I feel like a lot of those instruments do come from that area, accordion and so on. And polka oompa is the style, kind of it's got the tuba, the horns, the drummer, the singer, and they really stir up the party. It keeps the good vibe going, and I think that's probably where it started. And,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Why is it important to you to keep this celebration going here in Raleigh and at Capital Club 16?
Yeah. That's the question right there. Because I worked in Germany back in the 90s, and then went to New York City and worked at Zum Schneider as the chef there for 5 years. And then it turns out Sylvester Schneider, who is AKA Musil Franzi from the Ya Ya Ya's, we've kept this relationship together, and so we would celebrate up there Oktoberfest. He plays for a few weeks and then comes down here and celebrates with us, and keeps that connection going. And it's really like a vibe that you can't explain. You got to witness it, and I think Max can probably help with that one, right? It's just it's not your typical oompa polka, you know.
No, well, so Musil Franzi and the Ya Ya Ya's, I have a personal connection to this band that I even mentioned in our little promo. So the trombone player, Tim Vaughn, was essentially my roommate. I say essentially because I took his room in Los Angeles when he moved on to go somewhere else. And then he traveled for a bit. He did some Carnival cruise lines as like the touring trombone player in a band. And then he needed a place to stay when he got back. So he crashed with us for a little bit. He's a little bit of a vagabond, or at least was until now, because now Tim is, I'll just say, I think he might be one of the premier trombone players in the nation, and he's on Broadway. He is the first understudy on Hadestown. He performs on stage. He's done like over 150 episodes or 150 shows on this Tony Award and Grammy Award winning Broadway production. But he plays with the Slavic Soul Party. He's kind of into the oompa stuff, but he also plays just deep jazz. And I was there in the beginning when he kind of didn't really know how to play trombone that well. And I could hear him practicing in the bedroom and go, oh, this again. And so, but we've been musicians our whole lives. And He actually, we did some gigs together where he played guitar here and there. Both he and I like played music at a restaurant a couple times and like sang like Tom Petty tunes and whatever. So we have this great little connection. When I moved to Raleigh in 2013, he texted me and said, "Hey man, you're living in Raleigh now, right?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "I have a gig at this place called Capital Club 16 next week. You should come out." I'm like, "Yeah, I know Capital Club 16. That's crazy." So I went out. I saw my friend who I hadn't seen probably for a decade at that point. And then every year since then, we make it an annual thing. I see him every time. And I've been watching Sylvester Schneider and the Ya-Ya-Ya's, everybody else, Mosel Franzi. It's been the same band, and it's a cool vibe. But yeah, they do all the traditional stuff in the first set or two, and then they go deep, and they go crazy. And it's kind of like punk, ska, a lot of covers, but they just do them real gnarly, and there's amazing musicianship. And I may or may not have gotten on stage.
Yeah, apparently you belted a tune, Max.
Yeah, I sang Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Is there a recording of that?
You know, it's probably somewhere. I don't know. I saw people taking footage, but I don't have any recordings of it.
Hey, Elizabeth, put that up on the old gram there. Anybody who caught footage of Max singing, we need that footage.
Yeah, well, I ended up doing it the second time at Trophy Maywood, and that one... I apparently missed the third verse, and Erica, the accordion player, let me have it at the end. She's like, "If you're going to do it right. Why did you miss the third verse?" I'm like, "Because I was jumping up and down, and Tim was soloing like Neil Sean from Journey, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to jump on his toes." Anyhow, it was amazing. And even to Tim's point when he was talking about as a band, what you were saying is the band essentially just turns into like caretakers for like drunk adult children, because they're the ones that keep everybody there. They have them do like dances and like call them repeat things. Like, "When I say this, you say that." And people just keep, like, stay like attuned, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a whole,
it's
like
an interactive experience.
It is. Yeah. So you get people going.
A lot of dirndls going on.
Yeah.
Probably not bad for keeping people in the seats.
But so let's get back to, I love tradition. I love upholding tradition. Many people, Jake, talk about, like, I've observed you, and we've said hi to each other over the past 10 years, and we've gotten to know each other, but not extremely well. This is probably the most you and I have interacted. But what I know about you is you're a quiet guy. You are dedicated and super focused into what you do. But now that I've peeled back a couple of the onions, a couple of the layers, people are like, "Oh no, Jake, dude, he's intense, bro. Like, he is like, don't get in his way when he's in the middle of doing it." And I saw it, and like, there's a couple ways of looking at this, and I kind of rationalized, I think, what I feel is the truth. So you tell me. Your intensity doesn't come from you being like, quote unquote, mean or like aggressive. I looked at it like, you're doing Sylvester Schneider's grandma's recipes. You're trying to uphold tradition, and you know there's going to be a guy who knows if it's going to be good or not, who's about to have this food. So the intensity is like you wanting to make sure that you do grandma right and you hold the tradition right. Am I fair to say that?
Yeah, so a lot of these recipes do come from the classic books and just tradition from when I lived in Germany back in the 90s to Sylvester's mom. And we had this book. We called it the Bible. It was this Bavarian cookbook. It was blue like Bavaria, like the colors of Bavaria, blue and white. And we pulled all these recipes out of there and made them so we could accommodate the volume at Zum Schneider. And we brought that down to here. And then when we're out on site, that takes things to a whole other level. When you open up and there's like 40, 50 people waiting in line, and you just want to make sure that, you know, everything goes out as well as possible. And that's kind of what we do. We try to uphold these classic recipes, try to preserve, and then figure out a way to serve them, you know, in a modern kitchen or on site.
Yeah. What were you doing? Like, what were some of the highlights of the menu? Just so people can have an understanding of what you were serving.
Yeah, yeah. So at our restaurant, we do a little bit more plated entrees, and there are still some handheld food like brats and schnitzel sandwich. But we also do a hand cut spätzle, and that's a very kind of time time-honored recipe there. You just have to, you whip it up in a bowl with your hand, you know, or a spoon, and like get the gluten working so it stretches way out. Then you put it on a paddle and cut it off each noodle one by one into the water, and they float up. And so we toss that with alpine cheese and caramelized onions and some local oyster mushrooms. And it's almost like a German-style mac and cheese is what that is.
Yeah.
And that's actually on our menu. After 12 years of having a skillet mac and cheese, kind of American style, we took that off, and now we're just running Käsespätzle. So it's a little bit more traditional, gives people something of something kind of niche-y to come to our restaurant and check out. So recipes like that. And
you provided that, by the way, I think, for the whole band at the end of the night. And you gave me one as well. I had so many very tall beers that I didn't know that I ate that. And Tim, my trombone player, said, yeah, you ate it in about 14 seconds.
That's right.
I'm like, really? And then I proceeded to leave. I did to take a different culture. I did an Irish goodbye without letting anyone know I was leaving. And then I just walked up to the kitchen and passed out on the couch for the next 6 hours. So that was my night.
Nice.
But continue with the menu, because that handheld schnitzel, that took me back to when I worked for Wolfgang Puck, who is Austrian descent. And he was big, firm believer in the cold potato salad with the pounded schnitzel. Just walk us through a little bit. Like, maybe it's an intense recipe, but how do you do your schnitzel?
Yeah, so we normally serve a schnitzel sandwich, a breaded schnitzel sandwich at the restaurant, which can transfer over to any of these events, whether it's Triangle Oktoberfest or trophy. We can cook that on site, but that's one of our most popular at the restaurant too. So it's a breaded pork tenderloin. Mm. You know, you cut it, and then schnitzel is a thin cut. We pound it out a little bit even thinner, and then bread it, you know, egg wash, breadcrumbs, and then that gets fried, pan fried. And if you're at a big event where there's 50 people in line, once again, we have a deep fryer on site.
Yeah,
and so we fry that there. And Does
a deep fry make a big difference than the pan fry?
It's just faster and you can do more at a time.
Okay.
You know, so,
yeah. Got it.
Yeah. So that gets served on like a Kaiser roll with either like a mustard aioli, lettuce, tomato, onion, pickles. And that's something that can transfer over to what we're going to be dropping probably next spring. Is we did get into the food truck business.
Oh.
So that's going to be that food truck may be powered by schnitzel.
Cool.
And then so that's the handheld sandwich version. There's also the Wiener Schnitzel, which is a larger piece of cutlet served with lemon and potato salad and cucumber salad. That's a traditional way with like lingonberries or cranberries or something like that.
But does that always have to be pork tenderloin, or that you can get veal traditionally?
Yes. So traditional in Austria, it would be served with veal, but Bavaria is more pork centered, and that's like the pork mecca there. So,
okay.
We would do we do ours with pork. Just I think in America too, people eat that much more than veal. But yes, but traditionally in Austria, a little more refined with that veal cutlet. And then you can also do a dish like the Rahmschnitzel, which is on our menu. It's pork tenderloin pounded out thin, but it's not breaded, and it's pan fried with local mushrooms, just pan seared. Let's walk that back. It's not pan fried. It's more like pan seared, sauteed, and you. Two cutlets, throw the mushrooms in there, deglaze it with a little red wine gravy, and then finish it with a splash of cream. And that's like a really popular entree at our restaurant called Rahmschnitzel, served with spätzle and vegetables. That's one of our go-to entrees right there.
Okay. Matt, do you ever have German food? I don't hear you.
I mean, I've been to Germany. I've been to Austria. I've had food there. Yeah. I've been to Bavaria. Yes. So this is like your calling. This is not just like, I kind of cook German food because that's the job I got. You went to Germany specifically to do that, because you wanted to learn. Are you of German? I mean, Wolf.
Yeah. Wolf kind of sounds German.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're like generations ago we are, but from Germany. But I always wanted to go to Europe and cook. And so that was like, I went to the Culinary Institute of America, finished there in 95. First job out of there was in Telluride, Colorado. So I worked at the Peaks in Telluride. Was the hotel that was nice, you know.
Nice.
Nice experience there. Snowboard during the day and cook at night.
Yeah.
And then after that,
I thought they didn't let snowboarders at Telluride in the 90s.
No, they let us in. That might have been.
That was the changing of the guard.
They could have been changing the guard. I know there was like maybe one Utah place that didn't, and Taos, New Mexico didn't.
Snowbird.
Yeah. Squaw Valley was all pissy about that in Lake Tahoe too.
Yeah.
We had to go to Heavenly.
Yeah. In the early days, I used to have to up in Vermont. We used to have to do the course where they could show you could stop on call, where you go through the cones and then yell at stop. But anyway, Where were we?
You were cooking in Telluride.
Oh yeah, okay. So then I did want to get some European experience. I was pretty young, like in my mid-20s, and I did go over to Germany and cook there for a year. And
where
then
in Germany?
It was called Hotel Oberschwäbischer Hof, and we called it the O-Hof because Oberschwäbischer Hof is a very long word and hard to say.
Yeah. Was it in Berlin or?
No, so this was in Schwendi, and Schwendi's near like right in the middle of Stuttgart and Munich.
Okay.
You have and then closer to Stuttgart, you have Schwendi.
Okay.
Yeah. And so from there, I worked a couple other places in the States, and then in a roundabout way, found Sylvester Schneider at some Schneider in New York City, was his chef for 5 years. And then, a little more time passes. We're like, okay, what are we going to do? Shannon and I, we're married and had Johnny on the way, and we moved back to NC. And Johnny was born, and 6 months later, we opened Capital Club. And that was 12 years ago.
That was 12 years ago. Yeah.
That's a lot going on.
So. So German food is what I do. In the beginning, in the early days, we're like, we want to be an American restaurant with European influence, but as we get down the road with Capital Club, it's kind of pushing more to do that niche German food, which I spent so much time doing, which kind of takes me back to that. I feel like I'm a very nice and chill guy, but when it comes down to it, these recipes, they have to be made a certain way and executed right. So that's where it might seem like, growing up in kitchens with classic chefs and stuff like that. That's all I've ever done is cook. So, it's just, it has to be done a certain way. And we just try very hard to emulate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause from the outside looking in, I grew up and we had like fried cutlets for dinner. I'm like, it's a cutlet. What's the big deal? But when people talk about schnitzel and Wiener schnitzel, no.
Yeah.
This is schnitzel.
Oh, it's a big deal. Yeah, Wolfgang, he did his with veal. But yeah, I think veal doesn't go so well anymore in today's standards. People don't like little baby cows being massacred and then smashed into tiny little pieces.
Also, we're in North Carolina and we have great access to great pork. So
that's a good point too, because North Carolina food and like this region of Germany where I lived, it's so many parallels. Potatoes, cabbage, pork, what else? It's all.
Yeah, it's like
beer.
The ingredients are.
There you go.
A beer. Yeah, they're ready for you. Yeah. It's funny, when I first moved here and Capital Club 16 was on my radar, especially because of the Oktoberfest and the band. But also Jay Betsky's was around, and they were doing some crazy food. I've always given, high praise to Jay Betsky's as being a great restaurant. And I didn't realize, I guess I just kind of thought at the time, Raleigh has an important Bavarian culture. But really, I guess it was just these two restaurants that were really upholding this. And Jay Betsky's is gone now.
Reopening.
But I heard, that's what I was going to say, is I heard Jay Betsky's is going to reopen soon. I was thankful for that because I was like, they said they were closing and they might reopen. I'm like, is that just window dressing so that people don't get too sad? But yeah, they're coming, right?
Yeah. I can't remember now where they're opening it. It's not like in their old location. It's somewhere on the outskirts of Raleigh. But
menus are a little different. I know they, over at Jay Betsky's, they were doing a little bit more like pierogies and like pocket food, if you will. But I'd say for me, and being that Capital Club 16 is on the same city block as here we are in the kitchen, I've found myself many times just doing great business lunches at Capital Club. It's like the place to go because the food is always refined, but it has like a casual feel to it, like a comfortable feel. Your servers are great. They're always like high-spirited, and I've known a few servers that have worked for you or bartenders through the years, and everybody always has great things to say. Even like Derek was your sous chef for years, and that also speaks really volumes to what you've been able to do there. Is having longevity in this industry is not the easiest thing, and having people work for you for a long time. Any insight as to how you run your kitchen or your restaurant and why you're able to retain these people for so long and have a good culture in the business?
Yeah, that's a good question. To run back real quick to Jay Betsky's, definitely an awesome restaurant. They do very dialed in cuisine, and I think y'all are going to be very pumped up on their next move. Then just back to the Raleigh, German style restaurant, there's the two of us, and then, you know, we like to go out to Cary and do some catering events out there too. So we try to spread it out there. There's a German bakery, Anna Lohr's over there in Cary that does a great job. And, and then just,
Guglhumpf.
Guglhumpf, of course. Yeah. We definitely use their breads in the early days, but it's a little tricky, getting it over from Durham, but that was the only reason we stopped doing that. But yeah, Guglhumpf, very traditional, very great job. And then longevity in the business is just, it's kind of like, I don't want to sound wishy-washy on this, but it's almost like you got to take it seriously, but you can't take yourself too seriously. And that's where in the kitchen or the front of the house, we always try to have a tight crew that, yes, we are, we take it seriously, but we have fun doing it. That's kind of sounds cliche, but it's more like, we try to offer the best service and the best food we can at a fairly casual environment, but you look at our restaurant and it looks maybe a little fancier than it is. So
that is such a good point, because we were talking last week about how there's so few places open for lunch, mm-hmm. especially in downtown Raleigh. Do you guys have regular lunch hours every day?
Yeah, that's a good question. So lunch can be tricky because it's a short time frame. And you got to do the covers because it's a smaller, lower ticket price. Yeah. So we're like 11:30 to 2:30 right now, and we do Tuesday through Friday. We're about to drop a Saturday lunch, and of course we do Sunday brunch. But you definitely have our lunch regulars, and I think our lunch crowd kind of knows us for just a solid, consistent. Whether it's like a grilled ham and cheese, or it's the schnitzel sandwich, or the garden sandwich, some of these things have been on our menus for 12 years.
Yeah,
we're just not going to change them. But then we add some other things in too, lunch is like our workhorse for us. We're getting close to pre-COVID numbers, but we're not quite there.
Okay,
but we're working it back with lunch.
As Max likes to say, you have less competition around. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's because lunch is it's such a tricky thing. You got to get it out fast. And it's got to be right, and so.
But that is also, and maybe you. I mean, that's right. You've been in business for 12 years. That's an awesome run. Like, and especially talking to other people for lunch and with staffing issues these days. How do you get people to work lunch?
Yeah, lunch is tricky because it is a shorter shift as well. So a lot of our crew that works lunch also works dinner.
Okay, so they just work doubles.
Doubles. But we're only doing dinner Thursday, Friday, Saturday night because in our location, really. Tuesday, Wednesday, we're not really, since COVID, they really haven't jumped totally back.
Yeah.
So we're saving those nights for like pop-ups and certain things. So we have a smaller crew. We were like 21 back in 2019, 21 on the crew, and now we've got like maybe 15. And it puts me back in the kitchen online, like today, maybe 3-4 days a week, and other days I might be expoing or just setting the crew up and making sure all the pieces are in place.
Cool.
Well, and I just wanted to, before we get out of here, just talk about a little bit about the collaboration that you did with Trophy for the second Oktoberfest. And for one, this was the first time that you worked with Trophy for Oktoberfest, is that right?
Well, I know it's the second, and my mind's a little bit like this is the day after our big... Or we could, just came back from our big party, and so my mind's a little bit like potato salad right now. But I'm just saying, cold potato, yeah. But served a lot of schnitzel this weekend. Yeah.
By the way, Tim didn't eat his cold potato salad when he and I were sitting down having our schnitzel.
Dare he?
He got up to go start playing. I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "What?" I said, "You didn't even have one bite of the cold potato salad." He's like, "Oh, I'm good." I go, "No, you're not." And he goes, "What?" I said, "Eat this. It's..." Like, how are you not eating this? And he goes, "All right, fine." Then he took a bite, and then his eyes lit up. He's like, "I'm like, yeah. See what you've been missing this whole time? Like that cold potato salad is unbelievable."
It's the seeded mustard is the secret, right? I mean, that's like.
Why are you asking me? The
chef's it's definitely a good Bavarian mustard with a little horseradish, and it helps kick that up. But it is fun to hear the stories about like and your relationship with Tim, because I've known Tim since the first year I worked at Zum Schneider. I came out of the kitchen running down to the basement to grab something, and you got to run through the dining room, and I heard these guys playing, and it was just like this crazy Oompa punk rock style, and I was like, whoa. I stopped and checked them out for a second, and then I went back to the basement. It is fun to catch up. And
yeah, so but with Trophy,
yeah.
I think, so you did one before, I think, like before COVID perhaps?
Well, maybe, it was either, it might have been right, it might have been that 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 2019. But anyway, that was a fun one, and we were just like, we wanted to do it again. And this year we brought Mosel Franz and the Yayas to play at Chris and Woody's and Les's spot, and it was fun. They put the big tent out there. We had a place cooking, and that morning we had actually set up at the Black Forest Industries, a German car show that morning. So I split the crew in two different places, and we closed the restaurant to a la carte service. So I had one crew out at Black Forest Industries at this car show, serving those, you know, 300, 400, 500 people out there. And then myself, my brother, and some of the other crew went to Trophy and set up. So it was a monster day. Yeah. And by the time we got to Trophy, we rolled up, and there was like the pop-up market was already in full swing. It was a beautiful day.
It was crazy.
Looked at us like, whoa, we need to get our stuff back there and set up. And then when we started setting up, people started coming around and lining up. I was like, whoa, this is going to be big. And it was big. And those guys are so great to work with, the Trophy crew, and so easy to work with.
And they're all geared up in their lederhosen.
Yeah, they get into it. And their beer is great.
Beer was really good.
And so that's how that happened. Moving forward, like talking about the food truck that I'm going to drop in the spring, that's going to be hopefully one of my spots where I can park over there at Trophy, and we can kind of continue this relationship and outside of Oktoberfest, because they've always been huge supporters of the restaurant and come in for lunch a good bit, and hopefully we can, you know, keep that moving.
Yeah. Awesome.
Hey, Matt, fanboy part that happened, it was kind of cool. I'm standing there with Tim. We have the aforementioned schnitzel sandwiches, and we're looking down. We want to sit down. There are big picnic tables everywhere, and there's a group of like younger, like 20-somethings that are sitting at this table, and they had some space. And we're like, hey, can we sit down here, eat these sandwiches? And the one guy looks over and goes, only if I can be on your podcast.
Oh.
And I go, what? And he's like, I love the show, man. Listen to it every week.
Nice.
I'm like, whoa. All right. And dude. Tim, who's like supposed to be the star, like on the stage performing, he's like, oh, so now I'm with a celebrity here?
You're big time.
Dude. Yeah, Rally celebrity.
Baby. Yeah, baby.
Well, I mean, this is great. I look forward to next year and every year after that. Oktoberfest is just fun. I just liked it. Like in the end, it's just so carefree, stress-free.
Do you know what beers you drank for Oktoberfest, Max?
Well, there's the Trophy, what was it, Oktrophy Fest that they do, right. Which was great. But then you had a Polliner, I believe, that's always on tap over there at Capital Club. Sylvester was just telling me what I needed to drink. What's the dark beer that you had?
That was probably the Hockershore.
Yeah, Hockershore, that one.
You know, their Oktoberfest. We had the Hofbräu Oktoberfest. Like you just said, Polliner. We're going to run through those three now throughout the end of the month. And then we always do have a German lager from a Bavarian lager on tap, whether it's, you know, Hocker, Hofbräu, or Polliner. It's one of their golden lagers, because that's what we're kind of known for. You get it in a half liter and you just, you can just, you know, belly up and have that one there.
If you go to Germany for Oktoberfest, is that kind of the traditional, what you would find mostly, or it's a variation of different beers?
Yeah, so if you go to Oktoberfest in Munich at the actual Oktoberfest Platz, there's 7 breweries. I'm not going to try to name them because I'll probably leave some of them off.
Hofbräu, Lohenbräu.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Okay, so let's try.
Those are the two that I went to.
So I would have probably forgot Lohenbräu because that's kind of hard to get now. It was bought, I think, by an American company. This might even be wrong, so I'm not going to go there.
But now it's 24 years ago.
So, yeah, it's Bavarian again. And so, but anyway, that might be even wrong. But Hofbräu, Lohenbräu. Augustiner is one, Schneiderweiss, Spaten, Hockershore. Am I at 6 or 7? But as far as
styles, like, would you just get like a simple German lager? Mm-hmm.
It's the Oktoberfest style, the fest beer, and it's a little bit more hoppier. It's a little maybe maltier. In America, our Oktoberfest beers are darker in amber color, but over there, it's still fairly golden.
Yeah, I would think they would be lighter in alcohol, right? Because you're drinking like all day long.
They're like 4.5 to 5.5, okay. Yeah. Right?
Oktoberfest can even bump up to the 6-ish because it is lagered for a long time, meaning stored. You know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're deep rooted in tradition. Like those beers, that recipe hasn't changed for like 1,000 years.
Yeah, Reinheitsgebot.
Yeah, you don't mess around.
Reinheitsgebot.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about beer, but I mean personally, and I know Matt, we drink German wine about as often as we can get our hands on it. Do you have a nice extensive wine collection at Capital Club 16?
Yeah, so for wine, we dial our list in fairly small. We've got great Austrian and German wines, and white and red, and even rosé. Rosé from Mittelbach to Gernsterhof is we've had it since day one, and that's just it's a great dry rosé, and it goes great mm-hmm. with the food. You know, it could go great with veggie or meat dishes, and then we get down into the whites. Grüner Veltliner is always a huge one for us. Riesling, you kind of have to talk the Rieslings up because people are still thinking that it's always a sweet wine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a nice dry Riesling can hold up to great food, even like almost like a spicy goulash or something like that. And then the red wines, we got a great Anton Bauer Pinot Noir that has once again been on our list since day one. Some Zweigelts, Blaufränkisch. We really do try to keep it German, Austrian totally on our list.
I like that. Very regionally specific makes sense because I'm sure it's not too big of a list, right?
No, it's maybe five or six whites, five or six reds, two rosés, and it's just and we do rotate those out. Some of them, we always have.
Right.
And I always just because we're 'tis the season. We're Thanksgiving's upon us and all. You really can't go wrong with German wines for Thanksgiving. Like all of those wines are like paired perfectly. I would say for all that type of food. So
100%. Yeah.
I mean, Riesling is the ultimate pairing wine. So
yeah. Pinot Noir, though, Spätburgunder, or just the Pinot Noir. Yeah.
Even that dry rosé is amazing with turkey.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. Do you have a name for the food truck?
Well, we're going to call it the Wandering Wolf.
And our
12-year-old named it, and he said, I said, why Wandering Wolf? He said, well, because you're going to roam around and wander around and sell people food. So
there you go. Just wondering if you could open up a second location and call it New Schwanstein. Just because that would be fun to say.
That could be good.
like the castle?
Yeah.
Schwanstein?
Yeah. That's the castle
that's
of Bavaria.
The Cinderella castle.
But it's in Bavaria. And
yeah. I've been in that castle.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
And that was Ludwig who got married, I believe, or either him or his father that got married as the Oktoberfest builder. Teresa. Maybe it was the generation before, but it that was the line there that Oktoberfest started with. Yeah.
We'll have to have Castle look that up and fact check it.
I looked it up. I looked it up before this. That is correct. Basically, Oktoberfest was like the original wedding party. It was like a wedding party that just turned into a traditional. After that, they were like, this is a good idea. And then the government got involved and said, we can make money off of this, so why don't we just make this our national thing? And then that was it. And they were like, we're just going to put this up every October.
Plus, it makes sense with like fall harvest and stuff like that. So cool. Yeah.
The one thing with Oktoberfest that we don't really do that is done in Munich and Sylvester does up in New York is the main dish is roasted chicken. But we eat so much roasted chicken over here like year round. So it wouldn't be something that
doesn't feel festive.
We tried to do it in the early days and we're just like, all right, we're just going to do the Käsespätzle, Schnitzel, roast pork, Haxen, things like that.
That's cool. So, well, I, for one, and everybody out there, you must get to Capital Club 16 in downtown Raleigh, and you will eat and drink extremely merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NC F&B Podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes, and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.
We have something exciting that's happening, and friends of ours, kind of our extended family from the kitchen, from just all of our friend group, and the podcast family, that's right, the Bop or Flop podcast, has some exciting stuff happening this weekend, and we have in studio Jordan Scott Huggins, one of the two of Bop or Flop. Hello.
Hey, Max. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Your voice sounds familiar on these microphones because you've recorded.
It does. I got to tell you, I miss these headphones. I miss this mic. Maybe I'll break up with Spencer and move back in,
do that. Spencer Bland, the 50% of your Bop or Flop podcast. What's going on this weekend?
Yeah, so Spencer and I, it's actually in a couple weekends, October 27th. Also, do you have a name? I was trying to catch up on episodes. Do you guys have a name for your fans?
Oh.
Can I submit one?
Yes.
Because I wanted to be like, hello, NC, whatever.
Yeah, that's funny.
So I was just going to suggest FWBs. So you're friends with benefits. So I was just going to say, hey, NCFWBs, Spencer Bland and I, Jordan Scott Huggins. So obviously we run the Bop or Flop podcast. We're comedians on Thursday, October 27th at Goodnight's Comedy Club. And it's actually their pop-up in The Village, formerly Cameron Village. Thursday, October 27th at 7:30 p.m. Spencer and I are co-headlining Goodnight's Comedy Club, our home comedy club. It's a huge deal. We're the main guys. We're the main draw. And we're also recording a live album. problem. So we're trying to pack it out. So if you want to come out, we have $5 tickets, fun size tickets available at goodnightscomedy.com. You can also find tickets on my website at jordanscotthuggins.com or Spencer's website, godsfavoritecomedian.com. It's a whole thing. But if you just go to goodnightscomedy.com, you'll find Spencer Bland and Jordan Scott Huggins co-headlining, recording a live special, taping an album, and all that stuff.
Link in our show notes, too. We'll put it right there. Bop or Flop podcast. You said it before. It's a music podcast.
It's a music comedy podcast. And every week, we sit down, and either us or the guests will pick out a date in history, and then we will go back and revisit the Billboard top 10 songs from that date in history. And we actually, I can't remember the episode, the number that you did, but Max was one of our early yeah. episodes. It was like 1986. Does that sound right?
It wasn't that long ago, I chose, you just said pick a random date. I picked the date that felt the most awkward in my life, and that was the summer going from eighth grade to freshman year.
That's right.
Which
that's
was
right.
like okay. 1991, to date me a little bit. But the music then was really bad. And so I think we had maybe even Color Me Bad, or I know Wilson Phillips and John Bon Jovi were
yes,
on there.
Yes, that's right. Your memory's a lot better than mine
MC
right now.
MC Hammer was on there, Faith yeah. No More.
It was a great episode. It was the pre-redesign of the studio.
Yes.
But it was great. You pulled out your guitar halfway through it. We had a blast.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Really, yeah, it was a good episode.
So you listen to a song, and then ultimately it's either a bop
or a flop.
And
now, when you get into the nuances of it, there's a lot of other votes. It's like Fight Club. There are no rules. But, and actually, quite opposite Fight Club, we do want you to talk about our podcast to everybody. We'll listen to those 10 songs from the Billboard Hot 100 and see if they bop or flop. Are they good? Are they bad? Whatever.
Well, to connect the dots a little bit, since we are a food and beverage podcast, I'm putting you on the spot right now.
Okay.
I have 5 things that we've been discussing over the last few weeks or months.
Love this.
And I want to know if you think these are bops or flops.
I love this. Okay, hit
me. Number one, the big one, everyone's got to know, Taco Bell's return of the Mexican pizza. Is that a bop or flop?
Immediate bop, dude. You know what I would say, actually? And this comes up on every episode of Bop or Flop. That's a twist. So that is a little bit more background. That is when, and it's based on the song Chubby Checker's Twist, which redefined rock and roll.
Let's do the twist.
And it invented rock and roll, basically. So a twist is a vote reserved for the greatest of all songs that are genre-defining, music-redefining type votes. So I'm going to say the Mexican pizza is a twist. When's the last time you've seen a food item come out from any brand that has made as many waves as the Mexican pizza?
All right, number two, hard seltzers.
You know what? They're a bop. They're a bop. My buddy is such a great...
You are
a
millennial, so yeah. I'll give you that.
There's nothing like drinking six... You know, you have six in a backyard, and you're like, I'm good. I could drive home. And then you stand up, and you're like, I can't even walk right now, you know?
I think they're a bop. In my side.
But you know what I'm obsessed with right now in Raleigh is the new Raleigh Wine Shop location. They have buckets of Ramonas, which are wine spritzers.
I know it well.
Oh, buddy. Spank my butt and call me Ramona, because those things...
So Jordan Salcido is the maker of those wines, and she was on our podcast while we did an episode at Pool's Diner, probably back in 2018.
Okay, I'm gonna track her down on LinkedIn and send her a message. I'm gonna send her an in-mail message.
Yeah. Okay. In the same vein as hard seltzers, but a little shift, are you familiar with RTDs?
Yeah.
Ready
to drinks. I'm a copywriter, art director. I worked on Absolut's RTD campaign for a little bit.
Oh, okay.
You know what? I'm going to flop them. They're a flop for me. And it's solely based on a very specific memory that I have. They're too sugary. That's my main issue. Mm. They're too much. And in college, we always used to have parties. Our parties were famous at ECU because we would make jungle juice, Kool-Aid, in giant 50-gallon tubs that you get at Walmart. My friends would always make it, and it was great. And I got jealous of the, kind of the fame that they developed for making this. And I was like, let me take over one night. I put far too much sugar in it, and the party ended at 8:30 because everybody got tummy aches.
Yeah.
And so from that, the RTDs are too sugary.
It's too much too quick. And again,
too much too quick, yeah. But now that being said, if I show up to a garden party and there are RTDs there, you better believe I'm cracking open a couple,
All right, so for convenience factor,
I'm a hypocrite more than anything. So I'm gonna. It's a hypocritical flop for me.
All right, now what about this? And I go back. I'm kidding about you being the millennial, but apparently, the Gen Z is totally out of like dining in restaurants. They like delivery. They're like whatever. So I ask you, where do you stand on fine dining?
Oh, it's a bop, dude. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Our friends just came in from New York this past weekend, and we did the tour to Raleigh, which was great. We hit the Stanberry, Mofu Shop, our really, really good friends at Fine Folk. We spent too much money out the whole weekend.
Yeah.
It's a bop.
You're okay dropping five bills.
Yes.
Going out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
And my wife and I set out, any restaurant we go to, it doesn't even matter if it's Spanish or not, it's a tapas restaurant for us. We're ordering like nine appetizers, no mains, and we're just splitting everything.
That's the fun way to eat.
Yeah. So it's, dining out, fine dining, it's a bop, I think.
All right, let's connect it back to your show. Good Nights, no longer in the original location. They're building their new location, but they're popping up at this time. But in general, what say you about comedy show food?
Oh, buddy. This
bop
is...
Bop or flop on the comedy show food?
Oh, my God. Okay, objectively flop, right? Objectively... In a vacuum, flop.
But because they feed you for free a lot of times?
Yes, exactly that. Because I'm eating for free.
You literally don't want to bite the hand that feeds.
It's a bop. Now, I will tell you that Good Nights right now temporarily is doing what they call the pop, Good Nights pop-up at the old K&W cafeteria in Cameron Village or whatever, the village. Yeah, yeah. They're not rated right now for food. So they've been getting food trucks. Those are a bop, okay?
Yeah, food trucks are a bop.
But former Goodnight's kitchen in that 200-year-old basement of a brick, whatever. It's a flop. It's an objective flop. But when I'm getting, like I said, if I'm at a garden party and somebody has some RDDs and they're free, if you're offering for free, it's a bop, you know? But
you're a man of opportunity.
Nobody's going to a comedy club to eat, you know? Yeah. I think they're there and eating, but it's not, you're not, when's the last time you've been like, you know what, I'm going to drive out to West Cary to the Raleigh Improv to get some good jalapeno poppers.
Yeah, you're not going to do fine dining and the comedy show. You're like, will you keep it down?
Yeah. I'm eating my pretzel here.
Yeah. All right. So one more time, give the dates, the times.
Yes. Okay. Thursday, October 27th at 7:30 p.m. at Good Nights Comedy. There's some $5 tickets still left. After that, they're like $10-$15. The food is great. The drinks are good. But Thursday, October 27th at 7:30 p.m. Spencer Bland, Jordan Scott Huggins, goodnightscomedy.com to get tickets.
I'll be there.
I love it, man. Thank you so much.
See you soon, man.
Goodbye, NCFWBs.